Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Valdosta, Georgia has many outstanding attractions, one being one of the top high school football teams in the U.S. of A. Titletown High showcases the team on and off campus on Netflix beginning Friday. DocuSeries producer Jason Chivico joins me next. Almost 3 years ago, the first live outer space scripted series since the mid-1950s premiered in independent fashion. Orbiter Ducks invited viewers to influence both the characters and the action over its 8 episodes. Now Ducks has been redone for a second play via Dust, a smart TV programming service from Gunpowder and Sky, headed by former MTV chief Van Toffler. We'll reunite next half hour with co-creators Lillian Diaz-Preville and Stephen Talcott. Also ahead, a Steven Soderbergh miniseries for HBO Max, Nielsen reacts to NBC Universal's rating challenge, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. I present on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Verbal, and Amazon Music. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free audiobook or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later on. 9 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York, and wherever you are on this Wednesday afternoon, we welcome you to the program all about TV's current and future. Second of 3 episodes this week, wonderful hour in store for you with some terrific guests, and we invite you to be part of the program. All you got to do to connect with them is give them a call at 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio. Another way you're involved is our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You can find that at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk speaker tuning screen. Follow the instructions up to me live with you. The producer of Titletown High on Netflix, Jason Scavicchio, will join us live from Atlanta, Georgia, after these news notes. A new miniseries directed by Steven Soderbergh has received the go-ahead from HBO Max earlier today. Full Circle, written by Ed Solomon of Now You See Me fame, deals with a kidnapping in New York City that screws up and impacts a variety of local cultures. The 6-episode miniseries expected to premiere on HBO Max next year. On Monday, we led this segment with NBC Universal's plan to develop an alternative format to Nielsen's television rating service. Some 50 TV industry organizations have received a proposal request from NBCU. Now here's Nielsen's reaction through a statement, and I quote, "We remain confident in our current measurement solutions and look toward a media future that is pinned by measurement advances that follow the consumer cross-platform journey and keep pace with the rapid advancements in technology," unquote. Discovery Plus is joining the ranks of Christmas movie providing TV services this holiday season. Production is finished on Candy-Coated Christmas, the Food Network-inspired made-for-flick starring Molly McCook, John McCook, remember him from Young and the Restless and Bold and the Beautiful fame, Aaron D. Connell, Jason Park, and the pioneer woman host herself, Ray Drummond. The film takes place in Peppermint Hollow, Peppermint capital of the world. Now some quickies. Actor Michael Rapaport and shoe industry titan Steve Madden have formed 212 Works, working on TV and other media ventures. Netflix will stage a virtual fan event known as Tudum, September 25th, via YouTube. More than 70 series and films will be highlighted. Ready to Love opens its fourth season October 15th on the Oprah Winfrey Network. And before we came on the air, we learned that award-winning television director Thomas Schlamm will complete a 4-year run presiding over the Directors Guild of America. And that is news notes for today. Over the last few years, Netflix has become a great home for all sorts of unscripted nonfiction television. Whatever your favorite interest is, competition, natural history, true crime, whatever, there is probably a Netflix show for you. Well, if you're into high school sports, Friday Night Lights variety, but this time unscripted, true to life, and real, well, there's something that's definitely up your alley coming this way on Friday. It's called Titletown High. And joining us from Atlanta, Georgia, to talk all about is its producer, Jason Scavino. Jason, welcome in.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Jason. So how did this football team in Valdosta, Georgia, come your way?
So Valdosta is a team that's kind of been on our radar. We've done a lot of these kinds of series going back to when we did Two-A-Days series for MTV. And Valdosta's always been on our radar. I believe they're the winningest high school football program in the country. They're the third winningest football program on any level, high school, college, or pro. in wins, only behind Notre Dame University, Michigan, and then it's Valdosta High School. So it's obviously a school that is really rich in tradition, is winning a lot of football games typically, but in the last 5 years, they've kind of been on a downslide and kind of lost that national spotlight. So they brought in a coach last year named Rush Probst, who is known for winning everywhere he goes. And so when you combine Rush Probst and a school like Valdosta High School, it just kind of needs the show to be able to tell that story.
This coach, by the way, and I had a chance to see some of the clips from the trailer, he comes across as like your classic high school or college coach, like, you know, win, 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 let's go, let's go, let's go, go to the max, do what you have to do in order to win. It's like when you make the commitment to be a player on my team, you have a big commitment to live up to.
Absolutely. He is a win-at-all-costs kind of guy. He's not shy about that. He's won everywhere he's been. He's been to three different schools, and he wins. He wins state championships. He's won national championships. And so his demand is high to play on his team.
Mm-hmm. Why did Valdosta's team, first of all, how did they gain their reputation as a top team? What kind of spirit, what kind of play are they known for that makes it that way? And then why did they go on the downside?
Well, I think in South Georgia, football is like a religion. Valdosta is a small town, USA type of town. There's not a ton to do there. It's a great town, lovely town. There's just not a tremendous amount to do. So for them, they don't have a pro team. They don't have kind of a lot of teams to root for. So the high school football team became that kind of community event that everybody on Friday nights would go to. There's a joke around town that if you wanted to rob a some kind of store or something, do it on a Friday night because everybody is at these games. And so for, you know, 100 years that they've been playing football, they've been winning. They play hard-nosed, in-your-mouth kind of football. I mean, they line up and they smack you, and they play very physical type of football. And they've just been a winning program over the last 100 years and position themselves where there's no other high school that's really close to them. They've kind of been that number one high school. And I just think over the last 5 to 10 years, they've kind of declined. They won one state title, I believe, in the last 20 years. And I think part of that is just high school football has become almost a business now. These high school coaches, they don't teach classes anymore. They get paid well into the six figures. They get, you know, free cars, and they get, you know, houses paid for and all these other kinds of things to be a head football coach at a high school. And I think there's just so much money now being spent on these programs that it's really elevated them. You go to some of these high school football programs and the way they're run is more like a university.
And also you're seeing high school football games more and more, both on national television, whether it's on ESPN or Fox Sports One or CBS Sports Network, as well as individual services that are devoted to high school sports. Plus, you're also seeing more of it on the state and local level as well, whether through local TV stations, which have had them on for years, or whether through syndication, or whether through regional sports cable networks.
Absolutely. Make no mistake about it. High school football has now become a business. There's a business model for it. It's televised. There's sponsorship. Millions and millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars every year gets spent on high school football. You're talking about these major teams that compete at this high level. Some of these teams have budgets that are $500,000 to $700,000 a year for a high school football team.
Mm-hmm. Compared to other high school teams that you've covered, Jason, how quick or easy was it, or hard was it, to earn the team's trust to bring a crew down and capture what they do, both on and off campus?
Sure. Well, we've been doing these shows, luckily, for 20 years. One of the very first shows I've done is called Two-A-Days, that was done in Hoover, Alabama, aired on MTV, became their number one series. And then we, after doing a few high schools, we stepped up to kind of the college level, and we did a similar kind of show at Florida State University, Notre Dame, Navy, University of Kentucky basketball, and so on. And so we have a core crew that we use that do these shows with us year in and year out. And so we surround ourselves with great professionals that are great at their craft, that know how to build relationships with the players and their families and the coaches. And for us, one of the things we do is we go in earlier than normal, about 2-3 weeks, so that we can just shoot, get everybody comfortable, get everybody not looking at the camera, not talking to producers on camera, things of that nature. Get them comfortable. And believe it or not, after about 2-3 weeks, we really just become a part of their lives because we're with them 7 days a week. We have 5 to 12 cameras on any given day, over 25 microphones, and it just becomes a part of the process, believe it or not, after a few weeks.
Titletown High is Netflix's newest look at the world of high school sports, and it premieres this Friday. Jason Scavicchio is our guest. He's the producer of the series. He's with us live from Atlanta, Georgia this half hour. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tom Knapp, I'm with you live from New Weber, York. 90 degrees is top of the hour. Request your comment for Jason. Don't be shy. Make the phone call 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Friday on Tomorrow Will Be Televised, we'll get into another side of sports, the world of covering sports, sports wagering, and fantasy sports. There's a service that currently does on smart TV sets and smart devices called Sports Grid. We covered them last year, and on September 1st, they're going to have a spin-off service that will run in linear fashion on as a multicast channel on many Nexstar television stations around the country. Louis Malone, the president of Sports Grid, will be one of our guests Friday, 3:10 Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And we also hope to have another very important guest coming your way in either half hour. So be sure to join us Friday, third of our three episodes this week, 3:10 Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Because you are coming in, Jason, with Netflix, were you able to do some things with this profile of high school sports that you weren't able to do with others you've done before?
Well, I think Netflix, not only do they provide a tremendous platform, this is a show that won't only air domestically in the United States, but you're talking about our series is going to air in over 135 countries in over 38 different languages. And Netflix, besides being a great platform, was a great partner for us. When you're a producer producing these series, there's a lot of money that gets invested in. There's a lot of things that come up day to day and kind of curveballs that you get. And Netflix was a great partner throughout. Obviously, we shot this during the middle of COVID, and that was unlike anything had ever been done before. There was no blueprint. There was no rules. We didn't know kind of what to do. So we did the best that we could, and Netflix provided great guidance with research and doctors and anything we could need. They were definitely there to provide it. And I've produced obviously for a lot of different networks, and Netflix was a great partner in this series.
Well, let's dig deep because not only were you crew, but a lot of people covering high school and college football, pro football, all had to deal with the coronavirus pandemic last year in one major form for another. How did it impact you covering this team? How did it impact the team? And what things did you do in or put in place, what protocols you put in place to try to have the show work, the series work out the way it could for everybody involved?
Yeah, it's a great question. We had a tremendous amount of kind of protocols that we had put in place, and we worked very closely with Netflix. And look, there was a huge increase in cost because to be safe, we didn't have any two producers riding the car. We didn't have any two camera guys riding the car. No two audio guys ran the car. Only two people were allowed per vehicle. So usually on the production, you get a van and six of you all ride together. Now that one vehicle has turned into three vehicles. And so obviously wearing masks, getting tested every 2-3 days, every single week that we were down there, quarantining crew before they started. Anything and everything that kind of you could imagine are things that we tried to do to make the set as safe as possible. And then obviously with the team did go through some COVID scares. They had some games canceled that wasn't because of their COVID situation, but was because of the other teams that they were playing COVID situations. So I think out of 10 games that they were supposed to play in the regular season, I want to say they played 6, maybe 7. Games during the regular season. So COVID was definitely something, you know, that we all had to deal with. And like I said, there was no kind of blueprint for it. It had never been done before. But I think our crew did a great job in producing the series during a very difficult time.
Some college football and high school football, pro football games were played to either empty or near empty stadiums, depending on where they were played. Others had, while not the biggest crowds in the world, they had pretty fair-sized crowds. What was it like for the team players to play, particularly in their home stadium? What kind of crowd showed up, and how did they deal with that?
South Georgia had no limitation on their high school football games. At least Valdosta didn't. Not exactly sure about some of the away games, but Valdosta didn't limit the crowd at all. They felt like it was a self-policing kind of thing. If you were uncomfortable, don't come. But if you were comfortable, come on. I remember, I believe, CNN did an article because one of the big games that they play every year called Wintersville Classic, where they play Lowndes High School, their crosstown rival, there was barely an empty seat in the stadium. You had 12, 13,000 people there elbow to elbow for the entire game in, what, the month of September when, you know, things were still kind of hot. And so for the city of Valdosta, they believe, again, in the whole self-policing thing. And I know there was research done, again, I think it was by CNN or somebody else, but there was actually no kind of breakout, you know, from holding these events. And so they were able to get through the whole season with no fan restriction at all.
Mm-hmm. Some segments of your program look like they are sort of real-life Friday Night Lights. And I'm talking about what happens to the players off campus. How far were you able to go in terms of documenting the off-campus or off-school life of these players?
Very far. I think at our core, our series is a coming-of-age story for these kids. Our point of view is done through the lens of these kids and these players and student-athletes. Off the field was just as important as on the field, and that's the great thing doing these series that I really enjoy doing is one affects the other. How they do on the field or getting yelled at practice or what's going on in football affects their personal life. It affects their moods personally, affects their time they get to spend with a potential girlfriend or things of that nature, and so they go hand in hand. And so while we say this is a football series, it's really a coming-of-age series. It's really, at its core, it's the real-life Friday Night Lights. Like, that's what it is. Several outlets have called this the real Friday Night Lights meets the real Outer Banks. And I think it's a good kind of projection of what our series is going to be. There's a lot of football, and there's a lot of off-field. We're going to show the personal relationships that these student-athletes have with their girlfriends and their friends. And when you're playing on a team with this kind of demand for your time, it's hard. It's hard to have relationships, and it's hard to have friendships. And we're going to see firsthand how these student-athletes dealt with those situations.
Were there any points where you had to turn the camera off because the player objected or the coach objected?
I love this answer, and no. There was not one single time where we were told turn the camera off or get out of here or anything. And as I'm sure most people have done, they've heard about a lot of the storylines, and we were in the middle of those. We had cameras and microphones in closed-door meetings. We had cameras and microphones in players' houses, coaches' houses, Coach Probst's house. When everything went down with Coach Probst, we had a camera follow him the entire day from his meetings with the superintendent back to his house, having to tell his family kind of what was transpiring.
Deja Vigo is our guest this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. He is the producer of the new Netflix docuseries, Title Town High, dealing with one of the top high school football teams in the country based in Valdosta, Georgia. Georgia being one of the hotbeds of pro football, college football, and certainly high school football. And the series premieres on Netflix Friday, available on most smart TV sets, smart devices, and places through your local cable operator. And Jason's with us for a few more minutes. Joining us live from Atlanta, Hotlanta, Georgia. If you have a question or comment for him, don't be shy. Make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Earlier this year, we showcased ABC's special salute to Sesame Street, now more than 50 years old, now running on cable television through HBO. Well, there's another Sesame Street presentation that's coming up, but this one in theaters. It's called Street Gang. And next Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, one of our guests will be the producer of this documentary, which is already getting rave advance reviews, Trevor Kraft. And this week, there is a photo book of scenes from the film, and we will offer that book later on this year as a classic trivia segment prize. So be sure to join us next Friday when Trevor Kraft of the new documentary Street Gang will premiere in theaters this December. He'll be with us. That's next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. I've seen scenes from the film. It's about the making of Sesame Street and a lot of the key people behind it. I think you'll find it very amazing. And again, we hope to offer the book that shows photos from the film and much more as a classic trivia question prize later on this year. It makes a great holiday gift, by the way. I've seen what the book looks like, and it does make a wonderful holiday gift. We're looking forward to offering it, a copy of it, as a prize. Jason, what was the surprising development that you got out of catching this team and what it does on off the field?
I think the biggest thing was obviously what happened with Rush and how the Booster Club president ended up leaking a tape that he had recorded. And obviously that came out and was made public and was really a bombshell. I mean, it changed the course of everything that was going on and altered really everybody's life down there and kind of rocked the Valdosta program.
Mm-hmm. These
obviously
days,
it became national news.
Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, obviously that became national news with, you know, New York Times writing articles and Times and ESPN article with March Claybaugh. So there was a lot of attention, national attention, that this team was given during this year.
And how does that play out, or at least some of what plays out in the course of your series?
Yeah, we follow the entire story from start to finish as it developed, as it happened. I believe we have the only video interview that Nub Nelson did, who was the guy that kind of exposed everything that happened. And obviously we were with Rush Probst during a lot of that. We were in his home, like I said earlier, when he had to sit his family down and his wife and tell him what was going on. And that was a very emotional time for him and his family. And cameras were right there recording it. There were times where he questioned whether or not he was ever going to coach again, and we tell that story. And so it was a very emotional story. There's very intimate moments there that usually you don't get to see. The audience and the fans don't get to see these moments after a coach leaves the field and gives that interview. Typically, that's all you get to see. Well, in our series, we follow him home. We ride in the car with him. We go into his house with him. We go to the supper table with him. And so I think that's the really unique thing about our series is it's truly all access, and we documented all the storylines.
Yeah. Jason, in recent weeks, there's been a lot of talk about where college football is going. The decision by Oklahoma and Texas to, in a couple of years, leave the Big 12 conference, go into the SEC. We now have this alliance between the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12. Is there something like that happening? A lot of people think that ultimately we're going to have one major college football super conference, if you will, and then the other conferences, whether it's Mountain West or Conference USA, etc., are going to be left out in the cold. What's your thoughts on where high school football is going? Do you think we will ever see a national, let's say, high school football championship series the way we have the college football playoffs? Do you see Mace have like regional conferences with, let's say, crowning a champion?
Yeah, I really do. I think high school football is going that way. I've been very involved in it for the last 15 years. I've seen it develop. I've seen the TV contracts that are done. I've seen the national exposure that it's getting. Now with the new NIL rules, that's going to trickle down to these high school kids, and they're going to be able to make money. And I think ultimately, like I said earlier, high school football has become a business. It gets ratings. There's a lot of interest from the community and the different areas. And I think ultimately you're going to see these kind of super conferences in high school where these great teams are going to end up leaving their state associations because the state associations are voluntary. That was really the only option back in the day was to join each state association because that would help kind of guide them into playing for a state championship. I think in the next few years, you're going to see a lot of these powerhouse teams join together, especially in the Southeast, and then you'll probably have a West Conference and a Midwest Conference and things like that. But I would be shocked if in the next 5 years you didn't see that develop.
By the way, explain what NIH is, that acronym is, and what kind of rules we're talking about.
Sure. It's actually NIL, name, image, and likeness. And now that the NCAA has allowed college players to earn money on their name, image, and likeness, that trickles down to these high school kids. And so that just opens up a huge door because before, college players couldn't get paid for anything related to them playing a sport, and same thing with high school. But now that that's opened up kind of Pandora's box, now you have college kids that are signing promotional deals in the seven figures, in the millions of dollars. There is high school kids signing deals for tens of thousands of dollars. There was one high school basketball player that signed a deal for over $1 million. And so I think, again, going back to, unfortunately, to some and many probably, high school sports in general has become a business, and a big business at that.
Mm-hmm. So, Jason, where do you go from here? Are you going to be doing more about the high school football scene in upcoming series? Are you going to be going in, do you want to veer your career, whether it's unscripted or going to script in a different direction?
I enjoy doing unscripted, and I enjoy doing the sports crossover where it's sports entertainment, if you will, because the great thing with sports and these series that we're doing is it's real and it's raw and it's just real emotions, and you can't fabricate it. You can't fake it. It is what it is. And when you do these sports kind of entertainment doc series, like, there's no, hey, can you walk in this room again? Hey, can you kick that ball off again? Hey, can you do this different? It is what it is, and you have to capture those moments and be able to weave your story, especially in an episodic series where you're, you know, doing anywhere from 6 to 8 to 10 to 12 episodes. You have to make sure you can carry those viewers along, and I've always been really excited about being able to tell these real, raw, emotional stories. And so for me, I'm happy where I am. We've kind of found a niche in this area where if there's a big-time sports entertainment, sports doc kind of series, we usually get that phone call, whether it's a series that we develop ourselves internally or whether I'm represented by CAA, whether it's somebody reaching out to our agency and they're reaching out to us to help them produce a series. And so I'm excited with where we are. I think now with these new digital platforms like Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and everybody else, Facebook Watch, I think there's even more need for content and really good content. And so I'm excited about what the future holds on a TV digital side.
Titletown High, the story of Valdosta, Georgia's popular high school football team. That story unfolds Friday on Netflix. Remember, Netflix is available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices, also in some place available through your local cable operator. And for more details about the program and the service online, go to www.netflix.com. www.netflix.com. Titletown High premieres this Friday. Dave Zavico, thank you again for joining us. Good luck with the series and many, many more projects covering the world of high school sports and other unscripted things, too. It's been a great time having you on.
Thanks so much. I really enjoyed it.
Same here, Jason. Take care. Have a wonderful rest of your week and weekend.
Thank you. You as well.
Jason Cavico joining us live from Atlanta, Georgia. More tomorrow will be televised coming your way, but first some words from the fine folks at audible.com. Do you want more power in your life? I mean power that empowers you to be the max you can be in any walk of life, any situation you have in life. Well, there's an interesting new audiobook out that you can get through a trial run of audible.com. It's called 48 Laws of Power by Robert Greene. And he takes some of the more historical figures who were powerful people in their time, and he extrapolates what they did to have them get that power in their lives and how you can get that kind of power too. 48 Laws of Power by Robert Greene, and that could be what you use for a trial run with audible.com. Remember, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 200,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, our various podcast sites, and our website, tomorrowbetelevised.podsite.io. What you got to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, 1 month trial of the service, great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com, and while it lasts, health and wealth information, it could make a difference for you or someone you know. And don't forget, if you're already an Amazon Prime member customer, good news for you, because you can get two audiobooks for your trial, including one from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking about original audio series and podcasts, plus the best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, and great one woman and one man performances. So how about checking out audibletrial.com/televised now and hear how audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. Makes a great gift for you or someone you love. And all you got to do is head out to audibletrial.com/televised. You are listening to Tomorrow We Televise, the ProBot TV's current and future. We're now in our 15th year on the air. We started year 15 at the top of the month. We're on usually Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune and Radio. You want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Or check out the various podcast sites that take our program regularly, including Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Verbal, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Coming up on our next half hour, our classic trivia question of the week with two prizes in play. But first, we're going to reunite with two people that we talked to nearly 3 years ago when they were doing something very unique that hadn't been done since the mid-1950s, live science fiction on television with your interaction. We're talking about Orbital Redux. We'll have the co-creators with us live from Los Angeles after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tunein.com, together reaching over 60 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out Word of Mom Radio, that's MOM Radio, next Tuesday, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. It's helpful hints and much, much more. Word of Mom Radio, next Tuesday, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best to be charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of this Tomorrow Be Televised Hour on this Wednesday afternoon, the 25th of August, 2021. Simon Abba, I'm with you live from New York, 90 degrees top of the hour here in the Big Apple. We have more guests coming your way over the next half hour, plus our classic trivia question of the week. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Back in the 1950s, the early to mid-1950s, one of the most popular genres of television was live science fiction, both for kids and adults. There was Tom Corbett's Space Cadet, Tales of Tomorrow, very popular anthology series. Paul Newman got his start on that series. There was Captain Video and his Video Rangers, Space Patrol, and so much more. Well, 3 years ago, the next pair of people you will hear from decided, let's bring back those days of live science fiction where anything goes on television, but with a twist. Let's have the audience help determine how the characters go and the storylines go. The experiment in 8 episodes was called Orbital Redux. We covered it on this program, and we were one of the very few programs on radio or television to do so. Now, Orbital Redux, with some post-production, is back. All 8 episodes are now playing on Dust, the smart TV programming service available from Gunpowder and Skies service. It's a science fiction service that was started 5 years ago by former MTV chief Dan Toffler. Joining us live from Los Angeles in an internet radio exclusive, we welcome back to this program the co-creators of Orbital Redux, Lilian Diaz-Prebo and Stephen Talcote. Lilian and Stephen, welcome back.
Good afternoon, Simon.
It's great to be here, sir.
It is great to have both of you back on this program. And Lilian, we'll start with you. You now have, you know, the 3 years behind you benefit of this. What was the most important thing that both of you learned about doing live programming, especially live science fiction that also was interactive?
Oh, that's a great question. In some ways, what we learned was what we already knew, which was that pre-production was going to make or break the show. Pre-production is always so important in whatever you do, but particularly when it's live, when it's interactive, when you have multiple choices, there was an enormous amount of prep work that went into making sure that everything went off smoothly and that the audience had a good time and that our cast and crew had a good time. What surprised us was how much that meant to the cast and crew and how the immediacy of live and the fact that the decisions made in that half hour each week were canonical. That was, there's nothing left on the cutting room floor. You know, what they chose to do in the moment, that is where we went with the story from there. And that really invested everyone in the process and gave it this energy and a passion and enthusiasm for it, which was just really wonderful. I mean, this was such a passionate project for me and Stephen, but to have everyone else on board with that in the same way was just amazing.
Stephen, anything you want to add to that?
The most important thing I think that we both took from this is that we were only tapping the surface of the potential. Because we're at the dawn of a brand new age of film and television with virtual production, where we can actually do even more live today, 3 years later, using Unreal integration, which we've done with our stage here at Butcherbird Studios, so that we can create entirely new worlds at the flip of a switch, track them to cameras, and bring people live to a new planet on the edge of colonized space or into Earth's new ice age. And we could do that from scene to scene. So whereas we did a bottle episode each week inside of this spacecraft that was threatening to kill our astronauts, we could actually open up to whole new worlds. And that's more exciting than ever before.
Lillian, how much did the idea of taking a genre that had not been done in a very long time, live science fiction, which a lot of people grew up on in the late 1940s, early 1950s, television's first years of existence, and bring it back live and in living color with an interactive spin?
It was just a really exciting opportunity for us. We're both devoted science fiction fans. We always have been. You know, both of us grew up, you know, watching and reading and engaging in science fiction. And so it seemed like a really natural fit for us to explore new technology that way. What I think is particularly resonant with Orbital as a story being told this way, though, is that it's also a bit of a throwback. It takes place 25 years in the future, 30 years in the future, but the technology that they're using feels very 1960s. It feels very Apollo era. And so everything from the production design to the music that we are playing, both, you know, diegetically and then as a score for the piece, really feel like they're grounded in something that's 50 years old rather than in the future. So when we're using this, you know, retro technology in order to tell the story, but we're also using these old-fashioned filmmaking techniques in order to pull off some of these little stunts that we did. So there's a zero-G moment in episode 2 where we see an apple float off the dashboard of the spaceship, and that's just a piece of fishing line pulling that apple up into the air. And it looked like CG. The chat feed thought it was CG. They were completely baffled how we did that stunt in the moment. And it was the oldest piece of technology, you know, of cinematic technique in the book that we used for that.
I'd amplify something, this idea of bringing back a discipline from the 1950s, which was doing it live by necessity.
Hmm.
Obviously, into the 60s, there's the romance of an entire nation, multiple nations pulling together to get into space. And that was a raw, largely electromechanical endeavor where you could actually put your hands on the technology. And when we created the ship, the Tsiolkovsky, that's at the center of Orbital Redux, we wanted there to be 1,000 switches from actual aerospace equipment where when you, the viewer or the cast members touched and worked with it, that it felt like they were in that era. Interestingly enough, the key reason for this we felt was a really science fiction reason, which was global ransomware having taken over things to such an extent that people no longer use network technology when possible. And now 3 years later, it's a weekly headline of ransomware taking over things. That had been a story world point for us. We didn't think it would become a global story point quite so quickly.
And Stephen, it can't be said enough that everything about this was live. The music was performed live. The special effects were performed live. What you had to do with computer graphics was performed live. How much coordination was there between the production crew, the actors, the set people, everybody to make this pulled off as well as it did?
So I would, for our listeners today, I would imagine that rather than the classic scenario where the actors are acting and the crew members are crewing, transform that image in your head to every single person in front of and behind the camera is now a performer. Every camera operator, live sound designer, the guitarist who's part of the live band, the playback person, they must know the script and cues as well as or even better than the performers. So now you have this incredible organism of 50 people who are all working together to create the story at the same time. It's an energy that's probably akin to a mission control for a live space launch. I should add, though, Simon, that because there's also a post angle here, we also had to start that live mindset with the effort of preserving every one of those decisions for the later post process. So it wasn't just doing all of that live, but making sure that we recorded it and preserved all of the isolated tracks and elements and events to make sure that we could still come back and repost it later for the final version.
If you missed Orbital Redux the first time around when we covered it back in 2018, you can now see it on Dust. That's the science fiction programming service from Gunpowder and Sky, the MTV, the after the service that was put together 5 years ago by MTV chief Dan Toffler. And Dust is available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. We've got the co-creators of the original series, Lillian Diaz-Prepo and Stephen Kalkoke. They both join us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Bob, I'm with you from the other side of the U.S. of A. That's New York, 90 degrees at the top of the hour. We expect tomorrow the same 90 plus, maybe more, and then temperature backs down. We have a marvelous weekend, both in temperature and humidity. If a question or comment for our guests, don't be shy. Make your voice go at 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, our third episode of the week, we will have the president of SportsGrid. It's a programming service that deals with sports, sports betting, sports wagering, and fantasy sports. We covered them on our program last year. They're one of the first services of that kind, also available on smart TV sets and smart devices. And next Wednesday, September 1st, they will also be available with a new programming service, Sports Grid Network, that will run as a multicast channel on the Nextdoor television stations around the country. And we will have Lewis Malone, the president of Sports Grid, on our air Friday. 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Lillian, how was the audience able to interact with the series? And what was your post-reaction when it was all over? What did people say about their ability to influence either the characters or the plot?
So each episode had a slightly different option for how the audience would engage with the content. But we had one choice point that we would ask for at the beginning of the episode before we started during our pre-show. And then we would have one choice point during our post-show when we would have a little discussion, sort of Talking Dead style, about what people just saw. So the post-show one would show up in the following week's episode. And the pre-show one was a decision that we'd rehearsed that then would be triggered live during that week's episode. And it was everything from pick a line for these characters to say to each other to break the ice as they begin to build their relationship, to one critical system on the ship is going to break, pick which one it is, and our cast is going to have to react to that.
That was a particularly interesting one, by the way, because Yasmin Al-Bastami, who is playing the astronaut when everything goes wrong with the ship, the actress did not know what the audience had picked as a major disaster. We're talking ship fires, electrical malfunctions, oxygen lines rupturing. So at that moment in the story, when she begins looking around frantically on set, she did not know until she spotted it in that moment what the audience had picked. So it was this way to really adrenalize. And that was all done through the
right.
voting system at the time on Alpha. And Lillian, what was your experience of fan reaction?
It was amazing how enthusiastic the fans were, and one of my favorite things about the process was that in the beginning, as with many internet communities, they kind of wanted to prank the actors a little bit and make their lives harder and give them things to challenge them. But then I'd say by episode 3 or 4, they'd really come around that they cared about these characters and became very invested in their survival. And so as we got closer to the end of the series, they started actively making choices that they thought were going to really help the characters rather than hurt the characters. And that was a really fun thing to watch in real time, to see them building that enthusiasm for the project.
Simon, the end result was so important to us as creators on the show that when we created the final cut for Dust, we actually added to the beginning of every episode an alert that absolutely every moment of the show was done live and there were no do-overs,
mm-hmm.
because we wanted viewers watching the final cut, which of course is not the interactive version anymore, we wanted them to know going in that excitement and that energy that infuses every moment had a reason and a motivating factor.
Steven, how did Dust get involved in taking on the show for a second window? What led to that?
So Gunpowder and Sky has done an incredible job of celebrating genre filmmakers like really nobody before. One of their sister sites that they operate for Dust is Alter, which is a horror site. And one of our creators here at ButcherBird, Michael Schlein, was able to get his short in a foreign town on the site. It did very well in Alter, and he connected us to Sophie Carroll, who's one of their executives. And then we said, hey, you know what? We've got this incredible sci-fi series that we have the rights to since Legendary Digital shut down Alpha after experimenting with it. The rights reverted to us for a second season and beyond, which, of course, we're still working on. And so we reached out to Sophie, and she fell in love with the series. And not only that, but she was looking for something that would be a premiere driver for its premiere month, which is August. And so that's why it's on the front of the page, because it felt like that classic sci-fi, that humanist, optimistic space exploration energy was perfect for the existing Dust audience. So it ended up being a really organic fit that we were introduced to.
Liliana, Steven just said that you are working on a second season of Orbital. Where do we stand on that?
we've got our fingers crossed that we're going to find a home for it, and that the enthusiasm we're seeing on Dust is going to translate forward. So we're working on the pilot. We've got actually 5 seasons planned out in terms of where we think the story can go from here. It's a big universe, and our characters are excited to explore it.
You know, I think that dovetails with one of your first questions, Simon, which is, what is the potential of live and what do we learn from moving forward? I think it goes to virtual production, whereas because this is not a big budgeted series, we needed a way that we could be really smart the first season, which was keeping it contained to the ship. But now with virtual production, we're actually designing spacecraft and 3-image surrounds of that while we film it that would allow you to actually pilot the craft in space in real time for Unreal integration. So imagine, if you will, our star Yuri Lowenthal jumping into a one-man spacecraft. We're filming that, and he can actually control the direction of the spacecraft by hand live. So really it's about attracting that home for future seasons, whether it's Dust and they get excited about it, or a new provider who wants to have some of that fun with what live and interactive can do now that we have our whole new set of tools. So really it's up in the air right now, but we're prepared to move forward when we get that call.
Right.
So if you go with a second season, would it be live and virtual or taped or let's say same day with virtual interactivity put in?
I think our goal is always going to be to try and keep it live and interactive. It's something that was so core to the first season and that really made the first season what it was. And I think that we could only do it better now. There were a lot of things I think we really did great 3 years ago, but we are smarter and better creators and producers now. There's even more technology at our fingers. And so I think the opportunity to take this concept and do it even bigger and better, it's really exciting. And that's something I think would be just a differentiator for it in the world that we're in now, where there's so many streaming services, there's so much content coming out. What's going to make this appointment TV? What's going to make this something you set aside half an hour for every week? And it's the fact that you can spend those 30 minutes live with these characters and have an impact on where the story's going to go.
And it's a 2-for-1 as well, Simon, in that you don't just get that live appointment excitement. But if you don't want to tune in live, you're also going to get it down the line after we put the full post-production muscle behind it. So now for the first time as an audience member, you can tune in to the rough cut, so to speak, using the classic editorial term, live and shape the show, or you can choose to tune into the final cut after all the extra magic has been added. But we are watching an entire generation of new audiences who expects to interact with TV in this way. And that's one thing that Lillian and I have learned over the last 3 years, especially in our interactive work with Netflix and Twitch, Amazon, and those kind of providers. The audiences are continuing to change and what they expect.
Mm-hmm. We are speaking with the co-creators of Orbital Dust, which you can now see on Dust. That's Gunpowder and Sky science fiction channel, available on most smart TV sets and smart devices, organized, believe it or not, 5 years ago by the former head of MTV, Dan Toffler. Our co-creators are Lillian Diaz-Prebo and Stephen Kalko. They join us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. If you have a question or comment or many minutes with them, give a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, Simon Apple 04. My name coming up for the top of the hour, Classic Trivia Question of the Week, 2 prizes in play, and we'll tell you what they are when we get to that segment. Lillian, in the intervening years, we know, A, that you now have smart TV sets and devices that allow you to use your voice as well as your remote control to do the interactivity, because you have artificial intelligence voice service like Siri, Alexa, Google Assistant already built into the smart set or the smart device. We've had Disney Channel have a great 2-year run with an interactive show called Just Roll With It. It was on film. Ultimately, they do a live episode, by the way. And there's much, and now you have Virtual Worlds that we had Rival Peak from a company called Gendid that was on Facebook Watch and on Portal TV, which is Facebook's smart TV device. We're hearing that there's more efforts to try to interactive scripted as well as unscripted. What's your sense of where interactive TV is at? And how do you bring that new world and these new tools? Oh, and don't forget augmented reality, which you can also do now live. Mm-hmm. And we're now seeing that by local TV station weather reports. We're seeing it. Rival Peak was an example of doing virtual worlds live. Where do you see it all going?
I think the core to all of this technology and the storytelling is story and its character. And I think the balance is always going to be to find a way to thrive in that space and to give the audience something that they care about without being distracted by the gimmick. I think it's really easy for interactivity to turn into a video game. And if I want to play a video game, I'm going to go play a video game. If I want to watch TV, I want to watch TV. And so finding ways to make the interactivity and the audience participation feel really seamless and organic and easy, and for it to be meaningful in the story. So it's not just a little bit of dressing that you're putting on top. It's something that really impacts what the viewer is experiencing. And I think that people are really understanding that now and are engaging with that. But I think that that's something that I look forward to seeing more of. I think it really does bring in the audience in an exciting way, and it gives them something. Again, it's a reason for them to watch. It's a reason for them to choose this over the numerous other ways that you can entertain yourself for half an hour. And I hope that other people in the industry are responding to that and see that as an exciting opportunity.
There's a real through line, isn't there, Lillian, to the 1950s television example that Simon started with, where story was the driving point there, and that hasn't changed. Story is still the driving force behind whatever technology we're using. So even though we've talked about Unreal Engine and virtual worlds as the creators on the show, our first question is always going to be, how does this advance the story? I think what has changed is that audiences see themselves as a vital part of this storytelling and can own that experience with you. So for instance, when people tune in live, they know that they're going to be one of the authors of this story. So with interactive TV and all of the possibilities there, we have two questions. What is the technology that will best serve this story, and how can the audiences make best use of this technology as they participate and grow the story with us? And I think that's going to remain true for as long as we tell stories.
Totally.
Stephen, before we let you go, while you and Lillian wait for word about a second season of Orbital Ducks, are you working on any other interactive TV projects or other TV projects with together or with other people?
Yeah, we've got a lot going on right now. We're building out a slate of titles that we want to take out to different folks out here in Hollywood. Again, a lot of it's in that science fiction fantasy realm, since that's sort of our area of expertise. But I think it's also the question of which platforms are going to make the most sense for the right project. So not everything that I think we're looking at is necessarily interactive, but that's certainly a core part of our creative process as a collaborative duo.
You know, one interesting thing for us is that we've been now approached by a lot of studios who want to make really great content about their content.
Mm-hmm.
So part of that equation, Simon, is, as Lillian said, asking what does that particular platform need? So as we develop our genre content moving forward, we're going to have that driving story idea and those characters that we fall in love with, but we're always leaving room now to say, okay, what's that last 10 or 20% that we can use based on the needs of that interactive platform to make this special and relevant for that platform? In the case of Alpha for Legendary Digital, they had all sorts of new tools that they wanted us to take advantage of, so we wove those into the story. So really, the future is full of infinite possibilities on how we might shape a seasons 2 through 5 for this show and all of the other cool sci-fi and horror and fantasy that we're developing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, two things to keep in mind. One, in this growing world of cryptocurrency, NFTs, and blockchain, what role that will have in terms of getting shows like new season of Orbital Ducks, et cetera, financed, promoted, marketed, and maybe presented independently of a outside production company like Legendary in the case, or outside service like Alpha, which is no longer running. And secondly, the role of Metaverse, which Mark Zuckerberg has been talking about. And I was on a call with Digital Media Wire yesterday with a company called Viva, which is doing NFT collectibles. And they said, hey, at some point we're going to do a Metaverse, and that Metaverse might be on television. It may start out with smartphones or tablets, but smart TV sets and smart devices could become a home for these Metaverses. So the vision of people like Mark Zuckerberg, we'll see if they have a television vision as we go forward. Keep in mind both of those things. It could be interesting. If you want to see Orbital Redux for yourself, two places to go online, www.orbitalredux.com and watchdust.com. That's orbitalredux.com, www for it, and watchdust.com. Dust, again, is the Gunpowder and Sky sponsored science fiction service founded by former MTV chief Dan Toffler. Dust is available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. They also present original series, movies, all sorts of science fiction programming as well. And they also have a horror series, horror promoting service separately. And again, for them, watchdust.com. Lillian, Stephen, thank you both very much for joining us. Great to hear that the world of Orbital Redux may come back, maybe sooner than we think. And no matter what, we wish you the very best in your future projects, and we'd love to have you back when you're ready to go with something else or second season of this.
You're on. Thank you so much, Simon.
It's a pleasure, Simon. Have a great day.
You're welcome, William Stephen. Take care. Live long and prosper.
Ad Astra.
Lillian Diaz-Prevel and Stephen Calico joining us live from Los Angeles. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. We had interested on Monday's show. For first direct answer, you will win a Tiffany & Company small picture frame and the unofficial Downton Abbey cookbook. Monday was Barbara Eden's birthday. The I Dream of Jeannie star turned 9-0, and she looks fantastic. But here's the question. What was Barbara Eden's first comedy series? To give you a couple of clues, she co-starred with two other people on the series. It was a half hour. It was syndicated for two seasons, and it was based on a popular 20th Century Fox movie. It was 20th Century Fox, by the way, that helped produce and distribute the series. Again, the question, what was Barbara Eden's first comedy series? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're from. First correct answer wins the prizes. If you don't get a winner by the end today, we'll post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook at Simon Applebaum and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in. So do so. And all the very best. Thanks to all our guests today and all of you for tuning in. Once again, don't forget, our third of three episodes this week is on Friday at this very hour with Lewis Malone, the president of Sports Grid. We'll talk about the brand new linear network he is doing for Next Star Stations that will premiere on September 1st. And we may have another special guest coming your way also on Friday as well. So stay tuned to social media. We will break the news if we have it for you between now and then. Cayman Lampage program. Want to catch episodes you missed? Go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcast, all sorts of places. Remember, we also have our website, tomorrowbetelevised.podsite.io. And we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about our guests today? What's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Remember, however you communicate, we communicate back. Why? Because what you say matters. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other services of this program. Andy Toews, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, head of content. Website services provided by PodSite, the new internet avenue for podcasts. For more details, go to podsite.io. Our web coordinator is Giantris Vatris. Tomorrow's Televised is brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For one or two great audiobooks and much more, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Makes a great gift for you or someone you love. For Tomorrow's Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. We are back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, you know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, plus our various podcast sites, and including the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to now and then, please make it safe and make it great. If you haven't been vaccinated, see your doctor, get a good medical checkup, and go over your records, get a second opinion if you need to, and then make a great choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.